Comcast Studios, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Welcome to ABQ Connect. We are presented by Bosky Heating and Cooling. Bosky also provides plumbing, roofing, and restoration services. Call them at 444-7200 if you could use some service. Bosky Heating and Cooling, locally grown, locally owned. Brian Cochran, my good friend, John Moore Associates, certified financial planner in studio with us. Brian, as many of our listeners know, you're here every Friday, 10 minutes, give us a market update. Today you're here for the whole hour.
Yep, pleasure to be here.
It's nice to see you, and I do have listener questions for you, so we're going to start with those today. But after we answer these three listener questions, we are going to be talking about putting together some plans for, let's call it, to get out of COVID, the recovery of 2021. And a lot of people have financial planning and things that they need to do, and we'll talk about that most of the hour today. So first listener question is, my home is free and clear, but I have a $40K car loan and about $5,600 on a credit card. Should I put a 15-year mortgage at 3% on my home and pay off these items?
That's a great question. And interest rates are so low right now that a lot of people are looking at their debt differently and trying to make good decisions. What I would suggest in a circumstance like that is maybe consider a home equity line of credit as opposed to a full mortgage. And you've got that expertise. Maybe you could answer this question better than I could. But a home equity line of credit often comes with lower expenses on the front end, sometimes a much more simple instrument to obtain versus a traditional mortgage that requires more underwriting. So that could be a good way to get those other debts wiped out and replace them with something that's a little more low interest.
You know, there used to be some turnkey home equity lines of credit products that were available in the market, but I know a couple years ago those were harder to come by, and I've been out of it now long enough that I don't. And there's always something new in the mortgage industry, which makes it really interesting.
Yeah.
But I'm going to recommend people call my friend Ben Lucero at Indigo Mortgage. Indigo Mortgage can answer those questions for you at 836-5700. Ben will give you a straight up answer about how to do it as inexpensively as you possibly can. And Brian, I want to caveat one thing that I think you'll concur with. Don't go put a 15-year mortgage to pay off, say, $50,000 worth of debt. You might get that mortgage, but you got to structure it so you pay it off in like 26 months or 30 months or something that's manageable.
Exactly. You don't want to put on a new debt that might be a lower interest, but because of the extended duration, you end up actually paying a lot of interest over a long time. So that's why I like the line of credit option, is you can do that and then make an aggressive monthly or quarterly payment towards that line of credit and knock it out quickly.
Here's another question from a listener. They said, I have $150,000 invested in a 401k with a former employer. I have two questions, and I've never had these questions before. I thought these were kind of interesting. How do I measure my returns over the past 10 years compared to like a company like John Moore Associates?
Yeah, so the key word that this person's asking is it's a former employer. So if you have a current plan with your current employer on a 401k, that money usually needs to stay put, and you continue to contribute and build that. In this case, what I would answer is, how do you measure the returns? Most financial advisors can give you an idea of their past returns. However, I would certainly not go out and choose an advisor purely on past returns. And the reason for that is when you're paying a financial advisor, in my opinion, you're often paying for more than just performance. You need to look at what other services are provided and how is that advisor going to add value. And partly because all advisors always have to disclose that past performance can't guarantee future results. I actually have a tattoo of that here on my arm because it's something we say so much. But no, it's really important not to just judge past performance because you might be disappointed in the future outcome. So look for the total package, but most advisors can give you a concept or an idea of how their assets have performed.
And the second part of their question is it difficult to roll my 401k over to a company like John Moore Associates?
No, it's very easy to move employer plans like a 401k to a outside institution. That could either be a professional advisor or even to move it to an IRA with a provider that's letting you make the decisions outside of your retirement plan. So either way, very easy to do. The key is to follow the rules that the custodian, which is the person who's holding the new IRA, follow those rules closely so that you don't create a taxable event.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Last question from listeners today is, my home is under contract and I will be getting approximately $500,000 from the sale. Do you help people like me put an investment plan together to protect this equity?
Yes, we do. And what I often explain to people is a financial advisor is most valuable in times of large transition, buying a home, selling a home, loss of a spouse, new job, retiring, new marriage, all these different things that happen in life. It's these turning points where a good advisor can step in and help you avoid some pitfalls, because in a situation like yours, this might be your first time selling your home and having capital like that, but we've seen it dozens of times with dozens of families, so we can bring that experience to the table as well as our training and help you make wise decisions.
Brian, you've told us in prior programs that you work with not only a great team, different specialties in and among the employees with John Moore Associates, but you also have some outside counsel. You have tax attorneys and accountants and various people, and you don't give tax advice because you're not an accountant. Mm-hmm. But when you sell a home, say it's the last time you sell it, that money is actually not taxable under a certain number. So in this case, I don't know what their capital gain is, but I suspect that it's going to be less than $500,000. But they may have, you know, bought it for $200,000 or $300,000. So pretty much this is going to be money that's not going to be taxable. They're going to literally have $500,000. Is there a way to protect that and make investments that shelter some of that?
Exactly. And what we try to look at in a situation like this, you've just received a large lump sum. It becomes about prioritizing. Mm-hmm. So understanding what your goals are, because a lot of people look for cookie cutter answers here, or rules of thumb, but every family is different. So for this family, if they don't have an emergency reserve, let's start there. Let's build your emergency reserve. Do you have any other debts you'd like to reduce or pay off? Do you have any charitable goals you'd like to satisfy? And then we start looking at the more long-term goals of, you know, what's the purpose of this money? And that purpose and that intent will drive the recommendations. That's why an advisor is so important, is they can help you connect your goals and objectives to wise financial decisions.
And that's going to transition right into what we're going to talk about today.
Exactly.
A lot of people feel frazzled, even if their portfolio is in good shape. Most people that took your advice earlier this year, when COVID first hit, mm-hmm. their returns have been just fine. They're positive for the year. People that panicked and sold out and then tried to re-enter market, hard to say where they're at. But even the people that have been successful, they probably haven't combed their hair. They still have the corona hair, we call it. At least that's what Steve Ryman, our engineer, calls it. By the way, you need a haircut, Steve Ryman. Just teasing you. I always laugh when I watch these anchor people on television, especially early in corona, because they were in their homes, but none of them would even comb their hair. And I'm thinking to myself, hey, it's bad enough that you're in your jammies. At least comb your hair.
They're used to having a professional support for that. You know,
yeah, I think that's funny. So let's talk, Brian. Let's get started about how you make plans from here and get things back on track.
Yeah, and I like to think of this as a sort of year-end checklist. So what should people be thinking about with their personal finances at the end of the year? Oftentimes we compress some big decisions at the last minute. You know, we're all procrastinators. And so there's a few things that are good that can either wrap up 2020 or get you on the right start for 2021. And the first of those, we just talked about it for your listener that asked about selling their home. The key is to start with goals. All your financial decisions should be based on some sort of an objective. And so if you don't already have financial goals, what a great time to pause, you know, reflect on the last year, look forward and say, well, let's be more intentional about our financial decisions and begin with setting goals and priorities. And the key thing here, you know, you think of this often in terms of New Year's resolutions, and the most common New Year's resolutions have to do with health, weight, fitness. And second every year is finance. And I think one of the problems people fall into here is they set New Year's resolutions around health and finance both that are unrealistic. You know, you have people come in the air, well, I haven't worked out in 6 years, but I'm going to work out every day this year, you know? And it's the same thing with money. People say, you know, I've been mismanaging my spending my whole life, but this year I'm going to, you know, set these huge goals. So start off by using, you know, really reasonable goals. And I like the SMART goals, if you're familiar with that term. I think a lot of people are. And it starts with being specific. So be very specific. So if you say, I'm going to save this year. Well, no, that's not enough. What are you going to do? What are you going to save for? What are you going to save into? Are you going to save in a savings account? Are you going to retirement save? You know, what type of savings are you doing? And then the M is make it measurable. Make it something you can track so you know if you're meeting your goals. And then make it attainable or achievable is the A. And that's what I was just talking about. Make sure it's something that you can actually accomplish. Then make it relevant. Make it something that's going to move the needle for you with your finances. And then make it time bound. So is this a goal that you want to accomplish in the first 3 months of the year, by the end of the year? So an example here would be, I want to save $2,000 in my retirement plan by the end of June, okay, so that I can start to make more, get some momentum towards my retirement savings goals. For a lot of people, that $2,000 goal would be very achievable as long as they're intentional and it's measurable. I have a timeline. You know, it's very relevant because I need to be saving for the future. So start thinking about those goals. If you're in a relationship, if you're married, these goals should be set together so you have buy-in from both parties. We see that sometimes with couples where I may have a big goal, but my wife isn't along for the ride. You know, so she goes off and makes other money decisions. Get on the same page, make those smart goals, and kick off the new year being more intentional.
I'm fascinated that you bring a wife into it. You're obviously married, happily married with a family, but I know so many men that just try to make all these decisions, and maybe women too. Mm-hmm. I don't know enough married women and have had personal conversations with them to decide or know whether or not they're just making, you know, independent decisions. Yeah. But I do know a lot of men that do that. And I know a lot of men that don't consult their wives or even maybe even care. And boy, that just speaks to how difficult it is to be married and how that kind of thing can be very divisive. And is it hard, Brian, for men, I should say men or women, to humble themselves when they're in that kind of situation and say, look, what should we do together?
Yeah. I think it's not so much about humility when it comes to finance. What we usually find is there's one person in the relationship between the husband and wife that's the money person. It's the person who has the most interest on the topic. And it could be the husband, it could be the wife. But whoever has the most interest just sort of takes the reins, and the other person is more than happy to let go of the control because they don't care, they don't want to know. You know, it's often just tell me what I can spend and the rest is up to you. So whether it's the husband or the wife, it's not so much about being humble, but being, willing to slow down and include your partner in those decisions. And we do that with a lot of other aspects of our lives, but because finance can be something that is so, you know, just uninteresting to people or frustrating or scary, that they're happy to let that go. So it's a joint effort. The person who's been doing the financial decision making, the family CFO, if you will, needs to pause and engage the other party. And the other party needs to be willing to participate. Because if I, as the financial manager of my household, invite my wife, that's the first step. But she's got to accept that invitation and say, yeah, I'm willing to sit down and talk about goals. And here's the beauty of the goals conversation. If you set the right goals, you may not have to talk about this every day or every week for the rest of the year, because now the CFO of the household has sort of the marching orders for the year, and then he or she can start to make the decisions for the family.
But the goals also have to be accompanied with a little more detail. You've already kind of alluded to that. If you're going to save $2,000, how are you going to do that?
Mm-hmm.
If you're making $40,000 a year and you have a $600 a month car payment, you just bought this brand new car, might consider getting into a car that has a lesser payment. Mm-hmm. Then you have another extra $100 or an extra $200 a month. There's some things that you have to do. You can't do it all because the income stream is finite.
Yep. And a lot of financial planning is about prioritizing. We all have a fixed number of dollars that come in every month or every year to allocate. So we have to prioritize. And if you're not sure where to prioritize, my suggestion is start by looking at your consumer debts, your higher interest debts. If those are still in place, there's not much sense in saving in a, you know, 0.5% savings account when you're paying 16% on a credit card on the other side. That doesn't mean you shouldn't have any savings. It just means when you look at your priorities, consumer debt's a good priority, taking care of that. Building an emergency reserve is a common goal we see with clients. It's a constant struggle to maintain that cushion in their lifestyle and in their finances. So if you don't have that yet, maybe that's a good priority. And then you can start saving towards more long-term objectives or even more short to intermediate term things like buying a new car or a home. But a lot of times people start saving for the long term before they take care of their immediate needs, like taking care of high interest debt, or building that emergency reserve.
Having had five children, I want to ask you this. How early should you start saving for your children to go to college?
It's never too early and it's never too late. You know, at least get something started is a good rule. And different advisors have different opinions on this, but I like to use the airline metaphor where when you're sitting on a plane and they describe putting the oxygen mask on, what do they tell you to do if you have your child with you? Put yours on first. Mm-hmm. And a lot of parents struggle with this, but my advice generally is make sure that you're on the right path for your financial security today and for the household. And then prioritize your retirement savings before you put too much emphasis on the kid's education. And that doesn't mean you have to have all your retirement savings before you put a dollar away for your kid. But I've seen people who are putting $200, $300, $400 a month in education savings plans while saving nothing for themselves. And at the end, what you end up with is a kid with a good education and a parent who better hope the kid's going to make a lot of money because they'll be living with them in retirement.
There you go. Brian Cochran, John Moore Associates, Certified Financial Planner, is in studio with us today. He'll be here the whole hour. We've been talking about a year-end checklist. We've already talked about setting goals that are reasonable. I've got a few goals I've set in my life, Brian, that were totally unreasonable. Maybe I'll joke around with you about that in the next segment. He just started talking about prioritizing our goal. We got a lot of things to talk about today: tax planning, savings, investing, rebalancing your portfolio, and even some spiritual considerations when it comes to your money. Stay with us. We'll be right back. At Albuquerque Christian Children's Home, we believe that children are truly a gift from God. That's why we open our arms and our hearts to children who have been abused, neglected, or abandoned. Children who are hurting and scared. Although we have lots of love to give, caring also takes dollars. You can help provide a home for these children with us by making a tax-deductible donation online at acch4kids.org or by calling us at 898-5520. 2020 has been a challenge for all of us. Our children are growing up in a safe and secure Christian home because of your generous support. At this critical time, we need your support now more than ever. We receive no state or federal funding. Please consider a year-end donation to help us continue to provide a loving home for our children. Go to acch4kids.org and click on the Donate Now button or call us at 898-5520.
No doubt 2020 has brought setbacks. Ready for your comeback?
You know you're in a crisis when life is overwhelming you. When everywhere you look, there is a problem.
Tony Evans says your past does not need to be your future. Do you agree? Then you'll want a copy of Tony Evans' book, Your Comeback. And with any donation to Star 88 or KNKT in December, you'll get a copy of this dynamic book. You need this book to launch your life into a comeback. Just give a gift to star88.fm or knkt.com. Click under Donate, and you'll be helping our station make the end of the year budget. We all need a comeback.
In a crisis, you need to see the living God.
Make a donation at star88.fm or knkt.com under Donate and receive Tony Evans' book, Your Comeback.
Listening to KNKT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Well, earlier in the program, I said you got to call Indigo Mortgage. Next time you are shopping for a mortgage loan, you can call them at 836-5700. Ben Lucero has been a supporter of the programming and ministry of KNKT Radio. We appreciate him very much. Indigo Mortgage, because nobody cares more about your mortgage loan. Brian Cochran, John Moore Associates, they are a sponsor of our MoneyWise program that you hear every afternoon here on KNKT. Actually, just before Skip comes on, they're on, I think, at 11:30. You better correct me, Steve. I listen to it because I'm sitting in this chair many times. Rob West, of course, you're familiar with him, Kingdom Advisors. And tell us a little bit about John Moore Associates, and you are part of the Kingdom Advisors as well, Brian.
Yeah, so as a financial planner, and we provide financial planning and investment advisory services. We receive a lot of great coaching from the Kingdom Advisors Organization, which is a nationwide nonprofit organization that is in the business of teaching advisors like myself how to apply biblical principles in the advice we give our clients. So it includes financial advisors like me, but also attorneys, CPAs, people who are making important money decisions with their clients. And we get great training from them. Rob's a good friend, an amazing communicator and leader. We feel really fortunate for the Kingdom Advisors relationship.
I'm going to paraphrase this, but you've said this to us a couple of times. You utilize biblical principles, but a lot of your clients are not Christians. Mm-hmm. And the reason you do that is because those principles are true and they work, and the people are blessed even when they don't believe. I think that's an incredible testimony.
It is, and that's the truth of the Bible. It's timeless and it's transcendent. You know, my kids could follow in my footsteps and be in the same business, and they'll be able to use the same principles. And whether our clients have $50,000 or $50 million, those same principles work, and that's the beauty of it.
Yeah. Again, you're not a tax advisor, but you do help people do some tax planning as they consider their investments. And we're talking again about a year-end checklist. You talked a little bit about goals, making them reasonable. I had a goal, Brian, when I was graduating from college. I wanted to get drafted into the NBA. At the time I was in college, they had 10 rounds. At least when I started my senior year, they had 10 rounds. Of course, in the middle of my senior year, they changed it to 3. So the goal of getting that draft notification, I never materialized. But I've always thought about it a lot. One of the people you admire and like is Terry Stotts, who's mm-hmm. the coach of the Portland Trailblazers. I got to know Terry a little bit. We used to both work at Washington State basketball camp in Pullman, Washington, for about 6 weeks during the summer. And the reason that we would do that is because we were working with kids all day, which was just a great blessing, and I've always enjoyed coaching kids. But then at night, we would be tearing each other's hair out, battling, you know, till 12 midnight. And so you got some really good training playing in all those games. So that was a lot of fun. That was a goal that was never realized by me.
Yeah. That's a tough thing. You look at the numbers of great high school athletes that make it to college, and that the pool shrinks, and then it shrinks again dramatically when you move from college to NBA, because now there's only 2 rounds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I always admire all these underdog guys. Like, I love the movie Rudy, you know, Rudiger, I think was his name, and he played at Notre Dame. That was a great story. So the next step in our year-end checklist is considering tax planning.
Yep, and as you mentioned, I'm not a tax advisor, so any of these suggestions I give should be confirmed with a tax professional. But when you get into the world of financial planning, as the world we live in, you're going to run into tax ramifications of the different decisions you have. And also, there are tax opportunities you don't want to leave on the table. So one of the areas of tax planning we look at a lot is giving, charitable giving, generosity. And we are very fortunate. We work with some wonderfully generous families. And just in the last couple of weeks, we've given away hundreds of thousands of dollars in stock to different charities. And it's just the best part of what we do by far. And there's a couple of charitable concepts I think that are valid. The first is one I just touched on, gifts of stock. Because the stock market has recovered so well this year, a lot of people have stocks that they may have purchased earlier this year or several years ago that are now at a gain. And if you own a stock that's appreciated in value, this is outside of a retirement account, and you want to give to charity, one of the best strategies we use is to give the stock to charity rather than cash. And the reason for that is when you give cash to a charity, you get one tax benefit. You can deduct that gift as the charity receives it if it's a qualified charity. However, when you give shares of stock, you get 2 benefits. You still get the tax deduction for up to 30% of your income. But second, you also don't have to pay capital gains on that stock, because you transfer the stock before it's sold, and any appreciation is realized by the charity. And of course, charities, they don't pay tax. So there's a dual tax benefit there. So especially 2019 was a great year in stock markets. This was a strong year in stock markets, especially if you made some of the right calls in the last couple of years. So you may have some highly appreciated stock that you'd like to use to bless the charity of your choice.
So, Brian, I know some charitable organizations, because I talk to about 70% of my guests on this program are different charities. I'm trying to connect Albuquerque and our community to different charitable organizations and who's doing what. Talking about government agencies and all kinds of people that need funding. Mm-hmm. I suspect some of these organizations don't have a cash flow where they've established a stock portfolio or something. So can you, is that something difficult for them to set up if somebody donates stock to them?
It's not particularly difficult to set up, but also there's an alternate way to get your gifts of stock to a charity. We often use a tool called a donor advised fund. And a donor advised fund, we often joke that it's like a charitable checking account. So rather than gift the stock directly to a charity that may not be equipped to receive that stock, you can open this donor advised fund, and there's many institutions that do this, and you can send your shares of stock to the donor advised fund. That gift to the fund is a deductible gift. The donor advised fund provider sells the shares inside the donor advised fund. So again, you're not having to pay capital gains upon the sale of those stocks. And then the donor advised fund has turned it to cash that you can then distribute to a charity without having to set up to receive stock. So if you're going to make lots of smaller gifts, that's a good tool, because giving shares of stock is not a great way to give small gifts. But also you have a lot of flexibility then in who you donate to if there's smaller charities that haven't set up an account to receive shares.
I like that.
And we use that a lot. A donor advised fund is a simple, cost-effective tool, and there's, again, many qualified providers.
I know there's a buzzword among people that do fundraising called planned giving, and they're always approaching people that are, you know, late in their years, aren't going to be around too much longer, and they want, you know, these legacy gifts left to them. But I suspect that a lot of those are stock.
Yep, and so they can be moved pretty efficiently as part of an estate. You know, I have nothing against planned giving. I think it's a great way to leave a legacy when you pass. But one of our principles is do your giving while you're living, so you're knowing where it's going. So even if you have a legacy gift planned for a charity, maybe consider giving some along the way to make sure you can test that charity for its stewardship, to see that money at work while you're still alive. And don't just hoard all your assets and wait till you're gone for it to be a blessing to the community.
Yeah, great advice. I love it. You know what I like is you have all these sound bites that I can use. I love that stuff. Hey, talk to us a little bit about IRA contributions.
Yeah. So on the IRA side, one thing you can do, this doesn't have to be done by December 31st. You know, so your charitable gift, if you want the deduction this year, need to be done by December 31st. IRA contributions you can do up until the point that you file your taxes in April 15th of next year. But it is something people think about here at year end. So there's often a tax benefit to making contributions to your retirement account, your IRA. This is an area where you want to confirm based on income limits that the IRS has. If you're not sure if you're qualified, you can simply Google the term IRA contribution limit, and you'll find the IRS website that gives you the guidelines of whether you can get a deduction. But it's something that you don't want to leave on the table. And if you're getting some sort of year-end bonus or you have some extra income and you'd like to shelter some tax, making those IRA contributions is a great way to do it.
Brian Cochran in studio. He's a certified financial planner with John Moore Associates. Talked today already about goals. We talked about being reasonable with those goals, prioritizing how your goals are going to, how you're going to arrive at your goals and what things are going back to reasonable. I know how to set goals that are unreasonable. I'm really good at that. I hope that people are really getting something out of this. Brian, your website, johnmoore.com, has an insights tab, and a lot of what we're talking about, you post there in the insights section.
Yep, and that's not the place to go for the latest hot stock tips. What we try to teach there is good strategies to answer the questions that our clients have. If we hear something three or four times from a client, we'll turn that into a blog post, put it up there so that everybody can benefit by hearing the answers. And we also share videos from our webinars that we have with national level experts on different topics.
And they don't, people do not have to necessarily be investors with your company to utilize those.
Nope, that's all just a resource available for the community.
Very nice. We're going to be back with Brian to talk about saving and investing as step three in the year-end checklist. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Gonset Physical Medicine specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of spinal ligament injury. Don't ignore the pain and discomfort any longer. Schedule a consultation today at gonsted-nm.com or 505-884-8584.
At Albuquerque Christian Children's Home, we believe that children are truly a gift from God. That's why we open our arms and our hearts to children who have been abused, neglected, or abandoned. Children who are hurting and scared Although we have lots of love to give, caring also takes dollars. You can help provide a home for these children with us by making a tax-deductible donation online at acch4kids.org or by calling us at 898-5520. 2020 has been a challenge for all of us. Our children are growing up in a safe and secure Christian home because of your generous support. At this critical time, we need your support now more than ever. We receive no state or federal funding. Please consider a year-end donation to help us continue to provide a loving home for our children. Go to acch4kids.org and click on the Donate Now button or call us at 898-5520.
At Krecka Law, we believe in making things right when things go wrong. If you are injured, you shouldn't have to go it alone. You deserve someone who will listen to you and fight for you. We believe that you deserve to protect your future, protect your family, and protect your loved ones. We believe in challenging insurance companies and standing up to bullies. We believe that David can beat Goliath. 843-7777.
The Krecka Law Firm. Righting wrongs, protecting your future. TheKrekkaLawFirm.com.
Quality, experience, personal service. Dom Garcia Realty, placing the interest of others first.
My father-in-law passed away about 4.5 years ago, so the house went through probate, and we needed to sell the house after we got done with probate. So I introduced Dom to my sister-in-law, Gloria, who lived up in Denver, and she felt very comfortable with him and him handling the sale of the house. We had a buyer almost immediately, but it fell through after several months of negotiations. We did a lot of improvements on the house, and so that fell through, and Dom immediately had another backup buyer, and the house proceeded to sell very quickly after that. We closed. Dom handled everything so smoothly and professionally. It was fantastic.
We are a full-service broker that includes working with buyers and sellers, renting, leasing, management, whether residential or commercial.
Dom Garcia Realty, 899-4644. 899-4644.
Se habla español.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Brian Cochran, certified financial planner, John Moore Associates in studio. When we're off air, Brian and I get to talk about basketball and all kinds of fun things, being parents. I got a little more experience than you do being a parent. You got a ways to go, buddy.
Yeah.
You got those kids playing hoops yet?
It's heating up now, though. I got my 12-year-old's got the preteen attitude coming on, so we're trying to figure out how to manage that because he's always been just the sweetest kid, and he still is a really kind soul. He's the most empathetic person I know, but we're getting a little bit of that snap back every once in a while, that little talk back every once in a while.
That's okay. That just means he has character.
Yeah.
I love it.
He's got some big opinions for me.
And here's the funniest thing about it. I would think that with 5 children, that you'd have some commonalities between each child. But I got to tell you, man, God makes them each different, way different.
Ours, if one wants chocolate, the other one wants vanilla. If one wants to go left, the other one wants to go right. They have some of the same interests. They both like football and basketball and a couple other sports, and they like the same books. But when you ask them what they want to do or what they want to eat, or it's always the opposite. It just cracks me up. And you sit down at dinner, one of them eats all of his meat first, the other one eats all his veggies first. I don't know if they do it on purpose or if God's just laughing up there about what he's done to us, but it makes it fun.
That's funny. Brian's brought us a year-end checklist for financial planning. We talked about goals and tax planning. By the way, I'll post this on our abqconnect.online. If anybody wants to see the notes at least, I'll post it there. And then very often, Brian, after we put it up online, you usually put a link or actually post the interview on your own site. And that is johnmoore.com. And you go into the Insights tab. And Brian has a lot of that information there. Now we're going to talk about savings and investing.
Yeah, so the year-end checklist for investors could be a lot of different things. But I see a couple trends right now of things we're doing consistently for clients that I thought I'd pass along. And the first is to rebalance your portfolio. So a lot of times this is one of the simple disciplines that is left out for the average investor. We have our own strict processes of when and how we rebalance portfolios. And for those of you who aren't familiar, a rebalance of a portfolio basically acknowledges that as a year passes, different things will grow or shrink in the portfolio. And so the portfolio you started with at the beginning of the year can look very different by the end, depending on what does well and what does poorly. So at the end of every year, it's a good time to maybe take a step back, look at your portfolio and say, is this still the portfolio I intended? And especially in a year like this where stocks have done quite well, they may have grown, you may actually have more risk in your portfolio than you intended. And a rebalance is basically the process of taking a little off the table from what did the best in your portfolio and actually giving it to what did the worst. And a lot of people look at that and they go, wait a minute, you want me to sell what's working and buy what's not? And that's exactly what rebalancing often does, because markets move in trends and they move in waves. And so by doing that, you're often getting out of something that's been doing well but might be turning over, and then buying something different. But mostly it's about risk management and not letting one piece of your portfolio extend itself too far without correction.
So if you were to use percentages, for example, out of $100, you might have 25% in stocks. You might have a 20% in bonds. You might have, you know, what else is out there, precious metals and commodities and other kinds of things. And at the end of the year, that you have so much money left, hopefully you've gained some money, but the percentages in each one of those areas have changed. Yep. And you're just talking about rebalancing that.
And the natural tendency, the human behavior that falls into place, is to do the opposite. Mm-hmm. They put more money into what's working rather than taking some chips off the table. And that's how you end up with these overextended portfolios. And then when that sector or that asset class that you've been putting more money into does go south, now you're overexposed. Mm-hmm. So it's a very important discipline to have as an investor, especially in periods like this where we've had a good market that's recovered well. For example, in some of our portfolios, we rebalanced in January because last year was very strong. People have already forgotten that 2019 was a very good year in stock markets. So that gave us the opportunity to reset the portfolios in January. Well, then in March, the market dropped 30% in 3 weeks. So we reset our portfolios again in April because the stock percentages had become too small. And then now here at the end of the year, we're looking at rebalancing away from stocks again because those stocks that we bought back in April have appreciated significantly. So that's an example. That's not necessarily a recommendation for each individual investor. But if rebalancing is part of your process, end of year is a good time to kind of take a glance at your portfolio and see where it stands.
Brian, I know it might be redundant, but retell us and re-educate us on the difference between stocks and bonds, because one's a debt instrument and one of them's actual equity.
Yep, and I like to use the language owner and loaner. So when you buy a stock, you are an owner. A stock is a share of a company. If you're a shareholder or a stockholder, that means you own a piece of that entity. So if you own Apple stock, for example, you are now a part owner of Apple. Congratulations. You can be part of one of the largest companies in the world with only a few hundred dollars in your pocket. It's kind of a miracle, actually, when you think about it from a financial perspective. So as an owner, if you've ever been a business owner, you can appreciate this. There's no guarantees, right? Sometimes your product fails or bad news comes out about your company. So ownership comes with a fair amount of risk because you're exposing yourself to all the ups and downs. Now, a bond is a loaner. So stocks are owners, bonds are loaners. When you buy a bond, you're actually loaning money to whomever you bought the bond from. So if it's a municipal bond, like you can buy bonds that are issued by Bernalillo County or the state of New Mexico or a hospital bond, you can also buy bonds from companies. So, you know, individual corporations, if they need to raise cash, they will issue bonds as a loan. And you can also buy loans from the federal government in the form of treasury bills and treasury bonds. So these are all instruments you can participate in. Now, bonds are different than stocks because you don't own a company. If I get a bond from Apple, I don't own Apple shares. I'm issuing them a loan. And when you're a bondholder, you're entitled to a certain amount of interest that's been committed by the person, you know, paying on the loan. And then eventually you get your principal back as well. So there's considered generally to be less risk in bonds because you have specific terms set out that the bond issuer must satisfy. So not all bonds have zero risk, though. If I'm not a very high credit lender, you know, issuer, then maybe there's more risk there. So you have to be thoughtful. Even in the bond market, there can be risk. So when you're an investor, you're making a decision between those two particular categories. Do I want to be an owner or a loaner?
You mentioned the risk in bonds. I know up until several years ago, municipal bonds were considered to be a high-grade bond, but there have been a number of communities defaulting on bonds because of craziness in our economy and those kind of things, particularly a couple communities in California that I recall.
Yep.
So do you guys help people evaluate the integrity of a bond issuer and their financial stability.
We do, and we also partner with outside firms that help us do that. So there's a couple organizations, asset managers that we partner with that have whole teams that do this.
Yeah.
But your point is well taken, that municipal bonds are generally considered high quality, especially there are bond rating agencies that give you an idea of, is this a high quality issue or a low? And if you stick to those ratings, that can help you manage risk. But every instrument has some kind of risk. And now keep in mind, some of those bonds that defaulted, for example, the ones in California or Detroit bonds made some headlines. Puerto Rico bonds have made headlines. Now Illinois is on the radar because of some of their public debt issues. A lot of times that's a known thing. So those bonds have already been downgraded. They've already, you know, the market has already done its thing to take into account the higher risk of those bonds. But there's always still some present risk that they could totally default. And on a bond, a default could mean that they're not paying you the interest that they promised, or it could mean that you just don't ever get your money back on the loan at all.
Wow. And that would be scary for, especially for a lot of people that are along in years and can't really handle a lot of risk if they lose a lot in their portfolio.
Yep.
That brings me to my next question, and it's actually just come in via the email. My email address, by the way, is jim@abqconnect.online. If you do have a question for Brian, we may not be able to get to it today because we've got a lot more to talk about. We're going to talk about tax loss harvesting, and we're going to talk about the spiritual issues when it comes to handling your money as part of this year-end checklist. But before we go to those, Brian, I want to ask you a question that I just got, and that's from a listener that is apparently inheriting a significant amount of money. They don't have an attorney. They don't have an accountant, any of that. Can you walk them through that type of what to do and how to get this in the most advantageous way possible?
Yep, and that's what you discussed before. That's where we often will help our clients by bringing a whole team around them. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes that's the best value we can add in a client relationship. There's the things we're going to do, managing their assets, helping them make financial decisions, but sometimes getting them in touch with that expert attorney or that CPA that really knows their space, that can be extra value. So yes, that's the kind of advice that most any good qualified comprehensive financial planner in town should be able to help you build a team so that you're making good decisions, not just on how to invest the money that you've inherited, but also tax ramifications and estate planning.
What is tax loss harvesting?
Yeah, so generally we think of harvesting, you think of reaping something that's an asset. So we often talk about losses in our portfolio as an asset that needs to be harvested. So this term of tax loss harvesting, what it refers to is as you get to the end of the year, you can look into your portfolio, and any good diversified portfolio will have some things that are working and some things that are not. And those things that are working might have a loss that is not realized. So what we'll often do is we'll do a little extra digging in our portfolios this time of year, look for those things that might not be working this year, sell them, and then you realize a loss there that can either offset other gains you've realized when you might have sold some things that were doing well, or if you exceed the amount of gains you've realized for this year, you can actually get enough loss that you can take a deduction this year of up to $3,000 against your taxes that will help you save on your taxes. So tax loss harvesting, it's one of those areas where we can add value by being proactive and looking in the portfolio. So, you know, a lot of things in the market are working. The market overall is up, and a lot of people tend to think of the market as a singular instrument. But if you look inside something like the S&P 500, you've got some areas like technology that have been running very strong. You have other areas like energy that are still down for the year. So you might be able to go in there and find those little, the dogs in your portfolio, as we often say, harvest them and then, receive that tax benefit.
Yeah. We're going to take a break. Brian's going to be back and talk to us really about the spiritual part of this checklist for the end of the year 2020. Get you ready for the comeback in 2021. We'll be right back.
No doubt 2020 has brought setbacks. Ready for your comeback?
You know you're in a crisis when life is overwhelming you. When everywhere you look, there is a problem.
Tony Evans says your past does not need to be your future. Do you agree? Then you'll want a copy of Tony Evans' book, Your Comeback. And with any donation to Star 88 or KNKT in December, you'll get a copy of this dynamic book. You need this book to launch your life into a comeback. Just give a gift to star88.fm or knkt.com. Click under Donate. And you'll be helping our station make the end of the year budget. We all need a comeback.
In a crisis, you need to see the living God.
Make a donation at Star88.fm or KNKT.com under Donate and receive Tony Evans' book, Your Comeback.
It's a Space Command Turbo Rocket! Gene the Marine action figure, yes! What? A burning rubber collector's edition drag racer?
We're supposed to be wrapping these new toys for children in need. Grow up.
The imagination of a child isn't a bad idea as you shop for a new toy to donate to the toy drive at any of the Calvary Church campuses, Monday through Friday from 8 to 5 or during weekend services. More info at calvarynm.church.
Well, 2020, it has been nice to know you. Don't ask for references. And we're moving on. 2021, we love you. And to celebrate, KNKT and Star 88 present 2021 Year of the Comeback. So here are the launch plans. We'll kick off the comeback on the first Saturday of the new year with a dynamite day of the absolute finest messages from Louis Giglio, Tony Evans, David Jeremiah, and Skip Heitzig. There will be giveaways and announcements about comeback events in 2021. Doesn't that number sound wonderful?
Yeah!
2021. You cannot get here too soon. Comeback launch on January 2nd is brought to you on KNKT and Star 88 by Metashare.
You want a glass of water. What do? You walk over to the sink, you turn on the faucet, and you pour a glass of water. Simple, right? Not when you live in the poorest areas of Asia. A woman must walk an average of 3.7 miles just to find water that's free from disease. She fills a jug till it weighs about 44 pounds and then carries it on her head back to her village. And she does this every day of her life. That's if she can find clean water. But now there's hope. Gospel for Asia is building Jesus Wells. A Jesus well provides pure, clean water for an entire village and opens the way to talk about the living water of Jesus. This Christmas, give the gift of water. Donate a Jesus well and bless an entire village. Call 855-572-4628. That's 855-572-4628. For other ways to give, please visit knkt.com and click the Christmas Critter Campaign banner.
Hi, this is Adam Holtz, and you're listening to Plugged In.
You're a wolf when you sleep. A girl when you're awake.
In the new animated movie Wolfwalkers, now streaming on Apple TV+, men and wolves are at war. In 17th century Ireland, wolves attack human sheep each night. Every day, the humans cut down more of the wolves' forest. Whispered rumors suggest the attacks are being directed by creatures that are part man, part wolf. That's when Bill Goodfellow and his daughter Robin show up. He's a famous wolf hunter. But Robin? She's just curious. Wolfwalkers is a beautifully animated story, but intense moments and a pagan worldview make it a story with big hurdles. So we're giving Wolfwalkers a 2.5 out of 5 for family friendliness. Read the full review at PluggedIn.com/radio. I'm Adam Holtz for Focus on the Family's Plugged In Movie Review.
KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We are back with Brian Cochran. He is a certified financial planner with John Moore Associates. Take a look at johnmoore.com. A lot of great information under the Insights tab. And Brian has, all kinds of different information. Brian, when you consider what you're doing here on this program, you really give us, I want to say, an attitude of hard work, focus, and you try to keep us from being distracted by the emotion of investing. Because I think the emotion just makes people lose their minds.
Yeah, and finances, it's really hard to separate emotion from your financial decision because money represents things to us. It represents security. It represents status. It represents meaning and when you have all that wrapped into something like money, that's why God has so many warnings about money in the Bible. It starts to become competition in our hearts. And then what's in our heart? It's going to drive emotion. We're going to go through life's ups and downs, and money's part of it.
Yeah. You mentioned when you were talking about goals off air, you mentioned that sometimes people compare themselves to other people. That's really kind of a spiritual issue, right?
It is, and we're specifically told not to do that. And we're mostly, you know, if you look at the general themes about money and material things in the Bible, contentment is a theme that runs throughout, that we're supposed to start by being grateful and content with what God has provided us. And sometimes people confuse that as apathy or something like that, where we don't strive for more. And that's not it. You know, you can strive for more, but you start by being content. Say, I have everything I need and God has given me what I need. And I'm going to strive for more so that I can be more generous, so that I can be more productive, so I can serve more people. But I'm not going to strive for more because I don't have enough and I can only be happy with more.
Mm. Brian, have you seen people that make $45,000 a year and are doing just great and have savings and live within their means? And then compare that to somebody that's making $150,000 that everybody thinks, oh, yeah, if I made that much money, I would be saving and doing all of this. But you know plenty of people that aren't. They're struggling just like the people that have mismanaged their money at $45,000.
Exactly. People either associate high incomes with financial success, or they associate valuable possessions with financial success. And a lot of times the people who have the nicest stuff are the least financially secure, because those cars cost money, those houses cost money, the things you see, their vacations that they show off on Facebook, all that stuff costs money and actually pulls them away from financial success in some ways. So actually, I feel really fortunate, because many of our clients may have built up generous wealth, but they've done it slowly and steadily with a heart of contentment, and their identity has not changed. So they're the millionaire with the Toyota Camry in the garage, you know, and they're a lot of fun to serve because they have a good attitude about money.
Yeah. How important is being thankful?
I think it's huge. I think being content, being thankful can go hand in hand. But when you acknowledge that God owns everything and everything we have is a gift from him, all of that, I think, weaves in together. And if you start with an attitude of gratitude, where you show up and say, wow, God, you've given me all of this. Thank you. And I have everything I need. And next year I'm going to do even better. I'm going to earn more so I can be more generous. You know, all the things we talk about every month here together. But if you have that attitude rather than saying, gosh, I just need more money. You know, I got to have a nicer car. I've got to have this. You're leaving that feeling of gratitude, and you're going to a feeling of, you know, God doesn't love me. I'm disappointed. You know, and a lot of that, you start to push blame, but starting with gratitude and being thankful is such a healthy place to be.
Brian, do you have people that make a lot of money and they would just want more, more, more? And then do you have people that are minimally, you know, productive, or I shouldn't say that, maybe they're not, you know, getting big windfalls, but they're just very thankful and they're steady and they seem to be a lot more happy?
And we have a lot of that, the second, where people are maybe not earning as much or don't have as much accumulated and in the bank and in their investments, but they're just, there's this sense of, it is contentment. We keep coming back to that word, but it's this sense of just peace with where they are financially. And these are often very smart people. They're very, you know, productive and giving people, but they're just not wrapping their identity around their, you know, their income statement or their balance sheet. They see their identity in God, and they find joy in their family, and they don't have to have the big, nice things.
Yeah.
And man, they're just so fun to talk to when it comes to life and money, because they have the right perspective. And that doesn't mean you can't have that perspective if you're successful. We have also clients who make a lot of money and are very successful. And I think at that level, where you find the balance is by coming with an attitude of thankfulness and then being generous. Generosity fights the power of greed. God has given us the ability to be generous to help fight that battle in our hearts where money replaces God as part of our identity and as what we're seeking in life.
You know, there's a sales tactic that salespeople in all kinds of industries use, and it's a tactic of creating urgency.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is the latest and greatest deal, and it's only going to be available to you for the next day or whatever it might be. A lot of people have that in the investment world, and that's just not the way to make investments.
No, and there's multiple warnings in the Bible about those who seek to make money quickly are fools. And, you know, I think a lot of times what we're praying for from God, if it's about us and it's about more for me, it's less likely to be honored versus saying, I want more for other people. I want, you know, I want more contentment, not more stuff. And that's a much better place to be. And, my business partner, John Moore, our founder of our company, he often talks when we're talking about the business and what we're praying for, whether it's the right person to fill an empty position in the firm or, you know, praying for the right kinds of clients to come through the door. He often says that God answers prayer with slow, go, or no. And so think about that and keep that in mind when you're praying for things with your finances. Is God might want you to have that larger home down the line for more space for your growing family. God might want you to be able to retire someday, but he may not give you what you think you need now because he might be protecting you from something, or he may have other things in store for you. Or maybe the dollars he's bringing to you, you'll feel called to give it to somebody else and bless them. But keep that slow go and no in mind, because there's been a lot of things. I'm a driver. I want everything now. I am that person who's go, go, go. And I have to learn to listen when God's saying slow.
Yeah.
And I've had a lot of protection over the years because of him slowing me down.
Brian, I retired from banking here about 2 years ago now. Well, a year and a half or so. I can't remember the number of months. But one of the things that I saw that was something I was surprised by is once casinos got really going in New Mexico, I saw a lot of people with gambling debts. And I've not ever gone to a casino and really gambled much. I mean, I've taken 20 or 40 bucks over and thrown it in a slot machine. And after I lost that, I thought, I'm not doing this again. But, you know, and I hope the listeners aren't going to be all upset with me, but I just thought I should try it. And it wasn't for me. But here's the point I was going to make. As a lender, I would see credit lines of credit on a credit report that were very similar to a credit card, but it would say XYZ gaming. And what that was is apparently if you have reasonable credit and you gamble a certain amount of money, a lot of these casinos will put you, they'll give you credit in the casino, but it's exactly like a credit card. It's 25, 30% interest, just nuts. Are you guys running across any of that kind of stuff?
No, I think there's a gap that forms because people come to us generally have some amount of resources and they're trying to manage it well. Mm. And people who are that in debt at a casino probably aren't coming to us because they don't have the resources. And that kind of gambling is just an example of greed. You're addicted to the concept of suddenly having more wealth. That's greed and that's haste. And we're warned against those things. And it's also discontentment. I heard Rick Warren one time talking about money and he was talking about the lottery. He says, I don't buy lottery tickets. He goes, not because the odds are bad or, you know, any of that. He says, if you're buying a lottery ticket, it's because you think the only way to get what you want and what you think God wants for you is to suddenly win millions of dollars. It's a discontentment issue. Mm. And I thought that was so wise. It's like, I don't need to win the lottery if I have everything I need right now. And I mean, that was just,
yeah, that's powerful.
I mean, after all the things I've read about biblical finance, he's a great communicator, but he just nailed that. I mean, are you gambling because you want to hang out with your friends and play a couple rounds of blackjack? Are you gambling because you don't think God's given you enough and rather than work for more, you're going to go and try to win it quickly in haste? And, you know, that's a great way to walk around or walk away with less.
One of my favorite scriptures is Hebrews 12:11. It says, discipline is never pleasant, but it yields for those who train by it the peaceful fruit of righteousness. And you do need to put in the work to be a disciplined investor.
And discipline is a great word to leave with today as we go into the new year.
Brian, Merry Christmas to you and the Cochran family. We'll see you next year.
Bless you.
All right.
ABQ
ABQ Connect is presented by Bosky Heating and Cooling. For service, call 504-444-7200. Bosky Heating and Cooling. Locally grown, locally owned. ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.